big enough.
Oh, okay.
Okay, great.
Oh,
there you are. I thought you left here.
No, I'm here. I just thought.
No, I don't know if you can check it.
Who cares?
What is it?
Okay, so I think we can start. The last talk of the conference is going to be given by William Stein from UC San Diego. And he'll be talking to us about this very exciting new software for algebra and geometry experimentation, SAGE. Thank you.
So I'm very happy to be at DigiPen, and I'd like to thank the organizers. Matt, thanks, and Kristen. Good job on the workshop. By the way, I don't live in the Northwest now, but I'm originally from Oregon, so I'm sort of from the Northwest. I'm moving here next month, so I'm even more from the, or about to be from the Northwest.
And I'm a reporter.
I did indeed. Thank you. I always give my students a copy of the notes if they remind me to turn on the recorders, but I don't have a copy right now. By the way, I'm happy to be at DigiPen because before I knew there was such a thing as becoming a mathematician, I wanted to be a video game programmer. And in 1993, here's the game that I wrote. I spent the whole summer writing this game for Windows 3.1. So I just thought you're probably the first people to ever see this. That was my ex-girlfriend. So maybe I can kill her. Whoops, the last player's died. Looks like I was killed by her, unfortunately. But yeah. So I might be a student here if I hadn't discovered mathematics. So I'll put that away. Well, it's just a little video game.
What is iRiver?
iRiver is this thing right here. And I'm not going to give you a commercial on it right now. It's recording the audio of my talk, just in case somebody isn't here. Okay, so here's an email message. I'm going to tell you what SAGE is. And so the really quick answer is just to show you the back of my t-shirt, which has a list of different programs, but it's probably too small for you to read. And really, there's a lot more to SAGE than just this list of programs. But really, my goal today is just to tell you what SAGE is. And just to get started, tell you a little bit about what the goals are. So here's an email that I got on February 2nd recently, so earlier in the month. And it's from a person I've never heard of named Tiziano from Italy. And he writes, "My name is Tiziano, and I am from Italy. I'm writing this mail, first of all, because I would really like to thank you all for SAGE. It's something the world was really missing." And then he goes on to say, I paraphrased it, "Every free computer algebra system I've tried has reinvented many times the wheel without building the car." So, the goal of SAGE is to build the car rather than reinvent the wheel. So whenever possible, I don't have any interest in reinventing the wheel. Here's another email from somebody everyone here will have heard of because you're all number theorists. This is Henri Cohen at ANTS last time. And he says, "Dear William, very, very short and succinct, I think that you're doing a superb work with SAGE, and thank you for it." And that's sort of good that he's happy about SAGE, since SAGE uses Perry extensively, and he is the originator of Perry, which you all know about. All right, so now I'll just give you a little background. I wrote a huge amount of C++ code in 1997 and 98 in order to compute modular forms. This is part of a joint project with Kevin Buzzard, related to the Artin conjecture for modularity of icosahedral Gal representations. So I spent a whole summer writing code until my hands really ached. David Cole visited me and saw what I was doing, and he noticed I was writing an interpreter to use this program Heka that I'd written, and he said it was too bad that I had to write a whole interpreter from scratch. And he suggested instead using Magma, because Magma already has a nice interpreter. And David Cole had written a lot of code in Magma. In particular, he had written code for computing with ideals in quaternion algebras. That's an alternative approach to computing certain things about modular forms. And I very much wanted to use the algorithms that he had implemented. Those are the only implementations I was aware of. They're very relevant for computing. Well, I had an algorithm in my thesis for computing certain quantities in the Bertrand-Swearingen-Dyer conjecture, Tamagawa numbers, and half of the formula involves modular symbols calculations, which is what I had done when I wrote Heka, and the other half of the calculations involve computing with quaternion algebras. So I wanted to use the other half in order to compute Tamagawa numbers of modular abelian varieties. But I couldn't do it because I didn't have a copy of Magma or even knew what Magma was. So David, I guess somehow I got a copy of Magma, was able to use it, and I could somehow use his functions, but I didn't really understand Magma in the least bit. Then Alan Steele, who wrote a huge amount of Magma, he's a crack C programmer, that's what he likes to call himself. But he spent 2 days in Berkeley basically teaching me Magma. And after that, I knew Magma well enough that not only could I use it to do the calculation I wanted to do, but I ended up rewriting much more than what I'd written in Hecca in Magma. And then I ran around and I wrote a lot of stuff in Magma, and I tried to convert everyone to using Magma. So I did that. What?
Well.
Yeah, so I wouldn't credit myself too much, but I think I converted some number theorists to using Magma. I remember when I was first getting really into Magma, talking to Michael Stoll, who, he's a German number theorist that probably a lot of you know or have heard of. He's also really good at computing. Before he, went on to be a number theorist, he wrote Common Lisp for the Atari, for example. So he's one of the two authors of C Lisp, which is a very important programming language. He said that he really liked Magma compared to what he had been using before, which was, I think, a collection of C programs and Perry and so on, because you have everything under one roof. So with Magma, you want to do a calculation of a Galois group and then do something with a division polynomial. Everything's just, everything's in one place. So that one quote that he said, that he liked Magma because everything's under one roof, really stuck with me. Unfortunately, in 2004, I got somewhat frustrated with Magma. There are a few problems. It's not a mainstream programming language. It's yet another special purpose language for mathematics. And it's pretty good as it goes, but when you try some more modern languages, it's somewhat disappointing in comparison. I talked to Steve Linton, who is one of the original authors of, he's one of the main authors of GAP, and he told me that at the time when Magma was first conceived, it was a huge improvement over, I guess, Fortran. So, they moved from Fortran to Magma, they moved from Fortran to C to Magma. But it was supposed to be a huge improvement, and it was for the 1980s. But compared to what we have nowadays, it's kind of a frustrating language. For example, you can't define your own types. If you want to add a new type to Magma, say you've decided that you'd really like to compute with, you want to define a type for a Jacobian of a curve before it was there. So what you do is you fake types in whatever way you can, and then you beg the Magma people to add it into the C kernel of Magma, and they recompile it, and they give you a new version. So it's not really the same as, just typing class and then a name, which is what you'd rather do. So there's a lot of annoying things like that. There's also some issues with, a purely technical problem with Magma is that it's pretty difficult to save and load individual pieces of data. You compute some quantity, like a modular form, and you want to save it to disk and use it somewhere else. It's frustrating. And the main problem is because there's no eval command in Magma. Even if you can write out your data in a way that you could read back into Magma, it can be painful to do so. Of course, it'd be better if you didn't have to think at all about even doing that. In any case, there are some frustrations that I had with Magma. Also, it's closed source. I'm not an open source or die type person. I'm not Stallman, but there are some good arguments for why open source, at least ideally, would be better for doing mathematics. So here's a little more recent history. I got interested in Python when I heard Steve Hillian, who is a student of Leinster at Berkeley. He left mathematics and went to work in industry, but he used Python a lot in his industry jobs and was a big fan of it, so I started using Python a lot. Initially, in order to write good testing scripts for my Magma code, and also to overcome some shortcomings in Magma. And then when I was interviewing for a job in Austin, Texas, I had a few conversations with the people there, but the most interesting conversation by far was with one of the grad students there, this guy Gonzalo Tornario, who's now a postdoc in Montreal. But one thing he said to me is, if I come up with a really neat new algorithm, what should I implement it in? And I didn't know what the answer is, but what should you implement a new algorithm in? If you implement it in Magma, it's nice because you can get a free trip to Sydney. But on the other hand, the code somehow can't be used by a random grad student who doesn't have Magma. And that was actually a serious problem for me. I wrote Heka, this modular forms calculator, because I wanted any grad student who was trying to learn modular forms to have an easier time of learning modular forms. And I started learning that the only way that really happened was if I gave them an account on my machine that had Magma, since it's expensive and kind of hard to get access to otherwise. So depending on why you implement things, you might not want to implement in Magma, just because it might limit usability. Or maybe you're a Maple person, and you have the same issue there. Let's see. So Sage, which is what I'm talking about today, was born just over a year ago. I was at the AMS meeting in wherever it was last, Georgia? In Atlanta, Georgia. Not the last one, but one year ago. And I was sitting there at a table hacking away on some code, and David Joyner came up and started talking to me. And he asked me what I was doing, and I hadn't showed or really talked to anybody about what I was doing, but I was writing sort of the beginnings of Sage. And after I talked to him a little while, I decided to post a version online. He started using it, and then he's had a really, really big influence on the design and much of the code as well. I mean, the main influence he's had on the design is that, well, first, Sage was at that time called Manin. Manin being a, well, to my mind at least, a number theorist. I know he's much more general than that, but there's a couple of problems with the name Manin. One, it kind of restricts the program. You know, if you're an applied mathematician, you probably wouldn't, you know, think that a program called Manin is going to do anything that's helpful for you. Also, he's alive, and it's probably bad luck to name a program after a living person. Mazur told me to never name things after living people, so I don't want to. I messed up when I named a computer Shimura, but that's the last time I'll do that. So David had a huge influence on making Sage not a number theory package, but a number theory package plus a lot more. A symbolic algebra package, everything. So he's not a number theorist, and because of that, he's really pushed to make it a much more general package. And I'm glad because the amount of community support from people out there. I mean, basically, if you make a package that just does number theory, like Paris, the number of people that are going to help you is way, way smaller than if you make a package that does everything. That's just a fact that I've observed. It's not surprising, obviously. You know, if your program can do number theory plus be really useful for undergraduate teaching, suddenly there are a lot more people who are interested in possibly using the program and giving you feedback or submitting code. Here's a list of people who have had some non-trivial influence on Sage during the last year. So I won't read them out. But the biggest contributors are these two Davids, David Cole and David Joyner. But also these other people, some grad students. Martin Albrecht, for example, I've never met him. He just wrote me one day and gave me a bunch of extremely useful, difficult to write code to include in Sage. He's a German grad student in cryptography. So, and of course, many other people. A couple of weeks ago, I ran a conference at UCSD called Sage Days. Here's a picture during the workshop of some of the people there. These people all came and basically talked about Sage for 2 days and wrote a bunch of code. And it's a really diverse group of people. For example, so he's at University of Calgary and knows a lot about the theory of computing Hilbert modular forms. This guy worked on the OS X kernel for about 6 years at Apple. So it's a really different, you know, group of people. There's some applied mathematicians up there, physicists, quite a range of people. So what is Sage? Now I'm going to tell you what Sage is. And my goal in the talk is really that these three, that you'll know it, that you'll sort of understand these three sentences, which aren't difficult to understand. So what is Sage? One, it's a distribution, kind of like Linux, of free open source math software. And the back of my t-shirt has a list of which software I'm talking about. Math-related software. So there's been some attempt over the years to do this sort of thing. For example, there's a Linux Live Boot CD that you can use that has every free piece of math software you can imagine somehow stuck in there. But that's not at all what the goal is with Sage. It isn't like just getting Linux where you get a command prompt and a bunch of programs are there, but they don't work together. Sage is, I'll show you, it's a single shell. It looks a lot like using, you know, Maple or something else, and you can type commands into it. But you can have these commands run in other computer algebra systems. For example, I'm doing the very difficult task of adding 2 and 2 in various computer algebra systems.
And Maple got it right.
Yes, it did indeed. Mathematica, etc. So. So the reason that it took a long time, I'll tell you exactly what just happened. There are a whole bunch of different interfaces to various computer algebra systems. The way you use them is pretty straightforward, as you can see. What happens when you type Mathematica of 2 plus 2 is that Mathematica starts up on my computer. The Mathematica process is now running, and it's continuing to run. It's waiting for additional commands. But the first time that I executed a command, it started up that process. So that's why there was some pause. So it wasn't just that Mathematica is incredibly slow at addition. In fact, if we look at a terminal here, you can see Mathematica is one of the processes running on my system now. And it's continuing to run. It wasn't that I ran Mathematica, added 2 plus 2, Mathematica exited. It's continuing to run. So you can think of Sage in the first part as it's a whole bunch of free open source math-related software that is very, very integrated, that you can use from one command prompt in a nice way.
If you put any Maple or Mathematica command in that format, will it execute?
Yes. Completely arbitrary. Whoops, that's my email, not my talk. Okay. My email is mostly Sage stuff, so it would be relevant to show you. After the Sage Days workshop, I've been completely overloaded with code that people have been sending me. So, and maybe after this talk, I'll be overloaded again. That would be the best possible
output. What is the form of the output to those commands?
Okay, that is a very good question. And so, you know, a simple thing you could do would be that, let's say you want to use Maple. You give us input a string and you get output and you get out a string. And that's all it can do. That's not what this does. This is much more sophisticated than that. The output is a Python object. So in this case, I don't know so much Maple, but let's see. I doubt that will work. It might, I don't know. I haven't tried. It depends on whether or not you can plot from the text console in Maple. No, this is Sage, and in Sage is Python, so it's an assignment. Yeah, if I were to have typed something like Maple of, I guess, you know, A equals, then that would be a relation, I guess. But yeah. So the type of the thing that was returned is, it's a Python class, and this is what you see when you print. This is the representation in a string form of that Python class. But here there actually is a Python class. That Python class wraps an object in Maple. And there's a Maple interpreter running. In that Maple interpreter, there's a variable named Sage4. And the value of that variable is this list. And you can actually switch into that Maple interpreter, in some sense, interactively. And then you can give commands to Maple here. I don't know if this has any meaning in Maple, but yeah, it does, so it adds component-wise. This is in Maple. Now you can exit back to Sage. Sage is a bunch of software. Actually, I'm demonstrating really two in my, or maybe three in my list of points. This is three. So one is the distribution of software. I'll go into a little more detail about that. Two, it's a new computer algebra system. So there are about 50,000 lines of code that have already been written by various people to do neat things. And three, it's a better way to use what you already use. For example, I spent 5 years writing a huge amount of code for myself in Magma, and I don't want to throw that away. I don't want to stop using it. And I can continue to use it. All the code that I've written from Magma, or in Magma, I can just use from Sage. I could start up 10 different Magma sessions all at the same time and run stuff in them from Sage. So it's a possibly better way of using what you already use. So that's what Sage is. It's three things. And I'm just going to go into more detail for the rest of my talk about each of these points. And the examples I was showing you were really about three. about how to use, and in and of itself, just that would be, I think, interesting, but really there's more to it. Just to say a little more about one, Sage includes all of the software in black on the back of my t-shirt. The main things that it includes are Perry, the Perry C library, and GP, Singular, Gap, and Maxima. So these programs, so Gap covers group theory, Perry covers a huge amount of number theory, Singular does polynomial calculation, Maxima does symbolic calculation. So these are really kind of the big things that you need to do. Also, numerical linear algebra is an important thing, but that's pretty well handled by things that are standard with Python, or fairly standard for Python. If you download, if you go to the Sage website, which I will do now, somehow. Wait, actually, let's see. I know that I don't have a network connection, but I have a local mirror, so don't worry. Okay, so here's the, it might not work exactly right since it's a local mirror. Here's the Sage website. If you go to this website and click on the download link, then you'll get source code, a couple of different binaries, and then some optional standard packages and so on. If you click on source code, there's a tarball, which is currently 41 megabytes. That tarball, if you download it and extract it, you should be able to build it on OS 10, Windows under Cygwin, or pretty much any Linux distribution. And if you work a little bit harder, Solaris, which Kiran, did. So it's something that if you build it, then you have the programs I mentioned working together in a nice way, which is kind of a nice thing to do. It's extremely difficult on some systems to build all the standard open source math software. There, for some reason, mathematicians don't work very hard to get their programs into package managers. Singular is an exception. Singular seems to be reasonably well available. But and Perry's okay, but it's often dated, what you can get easily. Gap is really bad, I think, as far as being easily available for a lot of different systems. So basically, I made this tarball, all the library dependencies, everything that you need, even readline, is included in the tarball. And you download it, you type make, and you wait 20 or 30 minutes, and you get all these programs compiled in a local directory. You don't have to have root privileges or anything. So it's a nice thing in and of itself. If you think that's a horrible thing to do, and it seems like 10% of people view things from that point of view, Sage MinDist is basically the same thing, but it tries to use what's in your existing environment instead of building everything locally in a build tree. So that's the distribution. And a lot of work goes into having people test this tarball on a lot of different machines to make sure you really can build everything together successfully. So you benefit from all of that. So back to the talk. Also, just to emphasize, so everything in the Sage tarball is GPL'd or freer. And I carefully went through and listed all of the licenses for the code that's included. So when you get Sage, you get something with the property that any piece of the code included with Sage, and everything's open source, you can change it, see what the effects of your change are. You can redistribute the changes. There's no restrictions, except that you can't, the standard GPL restrictions are there. In fact, it's very easy. If you have installed Sage on your machine, all you do is you type sage space dash sdist and give a version number, and it will create a tarball, and that tarball is exactly like the tarball I make on my website. So you can very easily make your own, fork of Sage if you don't like me. So, and I strongly encourage you to make your own fork of Sage. Or if you have a machine where you've made, where you've successfully built Sage, you can type sage dash bdist and a version number, and it'll make a binary. So it deletes all the stuff that was only needed during the build process and makes something that you can then give to other people. All right, now a little step back for a second. Does this open source stuff really matter at all for mathematics? And here's Joachim Nebusser's take on this question from quite a while ago. So he says, you can read Seelos' theorem and its proof in Huppert's book in the library. Then you can use Seelos' theorem for the rest of your life free of charge. But for many computer algebra systems, license fees have to be paid regularly. You press buttons and you get answers in the same way as you get bright pictures from your television set, but you cannot control how they are made in either case. With this situation, Nebusser says, two of the most basic rules of conduct in mathematics are violated. In mathematics, information is passed on free of charge. So Steele's theorem, you can tell people about it. And everything is laid open for checking. If you read a proof, you're supposed to be able to read all the details of the proof. Otherwise, it's not considered something acceptable to the mathematics community. Not applying these rules to computer algebra systems that are made for mathematical research, so specifically singling out ones made for math research rather than, say, general ones used for calculus teaching, means moving in a most undesirable direction. Most important, can we expect somebody to believe a result of a program that he is not allowed to see? So back then, people, well, even now, people question whether you should believe the result of a program ever, but it's even worse if you're asked to believe the result of a program that you can't see the code for. And if you're me, for example, and I'm sure it's happened to a lot of you, you're asked to referee papers, and almost always in say computational number theory, very, very often these papers have tables that were computed, and you're very lucky to get any access to the code that made them, and certainly very, very lucky if you get complete access down to the lowest details of the code that was used to make the tables. So he has a point, I think. I don't feel as strongly as he does, but I do feel that he has a point. Let me just go back to the SAGE website for a minute. I feel like I'm jumping around a little, but here's the SAGE website. There are four big links that you can click on. One gives you download, as I mentioned, documentation. So the documentation, there's a quick list of features. I'll go back to that in a second, since really looking at that will answer the question, what is SAGE as far as the new computer algebra system and what code is distributed with SAGE or what interfaces are available. There's a tutorial, which is really good to look at if you want to spend, say, 3 hours and really get a sense of SAGE. It was written mostly by David Joyner, but a lot of other people have submitted things to the tutorial. David Joyner also wrote the SAGE constructions page, which I'll show you. It's really nice. It has a whole bunch of questions. How do I construct a permutation, a group? How do I compute the blank of a matrix? And you just click, say, care poly, and then it gives you an example. And these examples actually work. So one of the slightly unusual things that I've done in SAGE, not at all unusual in software engineering, but unusual in some math software that's available, is that all examples in the documentation are tested on a regular basis, and the output is, and the test check that the output equals the claimed output. So this is shockingly not done to the extent it should be in some programs. So there are lots and lots of nice examples. And just skimming through here, you'll learn a lot. So there's also probably the most important book by far is the reference manual, which is actually 900 pages now if you print it out. It has one huge index here that you can see. These are all the functions that are available in SAGE. So there's actually a lot of code there already. It's also organized. So SAGE is an object, or SAGE is written mainly in Python, which is an object-oriented language, and these are this is sort of a layout in a more object-oriented fashion of what code is available. So for example, if you're interested in schemes, then this is kind of a listing of various types of schemes where there's some support. For example, elliptic curves over the rational numbers. You click there and then it gives you the section about them. Here's a list of the commands that are available. And for each command, in most cases, there's extensive examples that illustrate their usage.
Are those commands calling for read or other programs?
It depends. So it depends entirely on what you're doing. For example, Heegner discriminants, well, there's no need to really call into Perry. I don't know off the top of my head exactly what that does, because I wrote it a year ago almost. But Heegner index uses Perry for part of its calculation, something else for another part.
When you say it uses Perry,
yes.
How do you, some of the software calls you have to pay for. So how do you deal with the licensing issues?
Licensing issues?
Well, if I'm calling a Maple.
There's no issue with Perry. All
but
stuff
with
that.
Maple there are.
Yeah, with Maple there would be. Yeah. OK, good question. The defaults for all functions are open source free stuff that's included with SAGE when possible. For example, integer factorization. If you ask to factor an integer, the default is to use Perry. Perry is not the fastest in the world at factoring, but it's pretty good in a lot of cases. There's an optional argument to factor. Right now, I think the only extra thing is cache, which is free but not open source and not included with SAGE. You could say factor and then give algorithm equals cache, and it'll use cache instead. there's no reason at all that you couldn't have an option to say algorithm equals Maple or Mathematica or whatever else. So that's just a technical implementation question, which doesn't answer your question yet, I realize. So the next question was licensing issues. If you don't have Magma installed on your computer, it gives an error saying you must install Magma. Or Maple or Mathematica. And in the case of Mathematica or Maple, I think it gives websites where you can buy it, and it gives the shocking list price of $1,800.
And if you have it installed,
yes.
Are there version issues?
So far, those haven't arisen because I haven't written, or people have not sent me very complicated code that relies on a specific version of Maple. If that were the case, I would hope they would put some check in the code that uses Maple that says, you know, is the version this? Otherwise, give an error message.
So no. I should anticipate if I have Maple.
I should say, so the interfaces are pseudo TTYs in all cases, except for to the Perry C library. And that the interface is far, far simpler than you might think. I mean, it's basically the computer simulates typing into the program and getting output. So it's very simple. All you need is, you know, some version of Maple where the prompt where you can make the prompt sort of look. It's just very simple. It's just pseudo TTYs. And with buffering turned on, I mean, with the appropriate parameters, pseudo TTYs are actually really fast. They're not as fast as, you know, C library calls. They're not fast if you want to send a huge amount of data. But as long as you're sending at most about 2,048 characters, it works very quickly. Maybe it's 5 times as slow as using a C library interface. And often, you're not asking to send back or give a huge amount of data to the system. If you do send a huge amount of data, if you have maybe make an integer with 100,000 digits and you want to send that into Maple, you got it out of Perry, it saves it to a file and then loads that file into Maple using the load command in Maple. So it's actually still pretty fast. But version issues aren't a problem because this isn't somehow linked against a version of the cMaple server or something like that. I mean, I would be interested in making that a possibility. I just don't know enough about Maple to do it. So let me just show you an example, which will illustrate a very nice sort of very open source aspect of Sage. So I'll do the example from here, 11A. So what's happening right now is it's loading Cremona's database of all elliptic curves of conductor up to 130,000 into the program. And it took the one with label 11A, which is this curve, first curve. And we can ask for the discriminants of quadratic imaginary fields that satisfy the Huebner hypothesis. So I guess I'll just say 100. So these are the discriminants up to or down to minus 100 that satisfy the Huebner hypothesis. How is that computed? Well, given any command in Sage, like this, you make an object and you want to call a command on it, an object-oriented syntax. Sage is almost the same as Python. You say E, the command name, and question mark. That will give you the documentation for the command. So it's going to, you know, it's going to take up some screen room in a second. Unfortunately, this doesn't have any documentation written. That's sad. That should be done. If you give two question marks, it gives you the source code for anything. So that's really nice. And this tells you how it's computing the discriminant list. It's making the list of minus D for D in the range of numbers between 1 and bound if that D minus D satisfies the Huebner hypothesis. So if you have a command and you wonder how it works, you just give double question mark and you get the source code right there. Very easy. And if you do end up using Sage, I strongly recommend that if you use a specific function a lot, that you do this. Because, for example, if you look at another command such as lSeries and look at the source code, this will give you a good hint as to how it works. This calls Perry. You can notice, you know that it must be doing something with Perry if you know any Perry. And also because it has the word Perry there. Also, you see that I've programmed around a bug in Perry. So it's good to see that right away. So if you're curious about how a function's working, instead of really being completely mystified, which is unfortunately often the case today, and something that's frustrated me a lot, you type double question mark after the command name, and pow, you get code. And a fortunate thing is most of Sage is written in Python, and this Python code, I think, is pretty readable. It looks kind of funny because of the screen size, but if I reduce the font a little, it's a pretty simple syntax. It's fairly similar to Magma's, actually, but with less verbosity. So Python's generally considered to be a very readable language. Okay, so so this is a list of programs that are not included in the Sage tarball and why they're not included. NZMath is a pure Python number theory thing that's supposed to replace CMath. And I think that writing a serious computational program in pure Python is not a good idea because it's going to be very, very slow. Sage does not take that approach at all. When things need to be fast, they're written in a compiled language. But NZMath is a good source of inspiration. Looking at the code can be really helpful. And it's released under the BSD license, so there's no question of the legality of looking at the code. Macaulay 2 is only not included because, well, it just hasn't happened yet. It's just difficult to compile. But that will change. GNUplot has a really screwy license. It was included for about a week in Sage, but I removed it because you're not allowed to change GNUplot and then redistribute it, which is really annoying because GNUplot, when you build it, it hard codes paths into the binary. And I want the Sage directory. When you build Sage, you should be able to move that directory and have everything work still. And I have various things to, I have actually some changes to the install process for, I think, Singular and Gap to make it so that you can definitely move after you build. I wanted to fix GNUplot so that I could also do this, but I started reading about the license with GNUplot, and it's not the GPL, and you can't just change GNUplot at will, make a new binary, and distribute that. It's not allowed. So it has a, you know, it's surprising that a program with that name would not be GPL, but it's actually not.
Is that just an oversight?
It was, I think it was named at the same time as or before the GPL existed. So it's a coincidence.
Did you try contacting the authors about this?
So there's one person in the world who apparently has the right to say you can redistribute GNUplot. And a few weeks ago, there was a very long thread in the GNUplot mailing list discussing the frustration that some of the developers have with this setup. And the one guy was nowhere to be seen in the discussion. So I'm a little worried about the whole situation. Fortunately, so GNUplot is a program for drawing lots of graphs. Probably a lot of people here have used it. Fortunately, in Python, there's an alternative to GNUplot called matplotlib, which is a native Python program. And it's really, really good for drawing graphs. So we're going to go with that instead. And it's licensed under a very free license. Cache isn't included because it's not open source. It is free, though. And you can use Sage if you want to use something written in cache, at least if you have a Linux or OS X machine. You type one command, it will download cache and install it locally in your tree, and then you have cache.
Cache
is essentially, the one-sentence answer is it's the number fields part of Magma, but free. It's developed in Germany. It's a nice system. It has some incredibly powerful algorithms implemented in it. Let's see. Magma's obviously not included. Mathematica and Maple are not included. MATLAB doesn't even have any support. But you can use all these programs from Sage, as I've illustrated a little bit earlier. Illustrating the second point, this is just, I went into the directory with the Sage code and typed ls. These are the top-level directories, and there are many subdirectories with lots of code. Here's a very silly measure of the complexity of the program. I catted at least some of the files that are in the source code, sorted them, made them unique, so that's the number of unique lines of code, 52,000. Here, these are the lines of code. You can't see the right-hand side, but these are the input test lines. So these are lines that are inside of the source code. There are lots and lots and lots of examples, and they all begin with Sage colon, and then they have an input line that gets tested, and the output is compared to the input on a regular basis. These are the number of lines of that code that are actual test inputs. So I consider this whole test-driven development thing to be a good idea, especially with an interpreter setup, which is what Sage mostly uses. These are, again, programs that are included with Sage, and this is just to emphasize how the programs were chosen to be free, open source, and to cover each base that you need in order to do mathematics from computing modular forms to teaching your calculus class. So definitely the scope of Sage is, say, much broader than Magma. Magma doesn't do any symbolic stuff, whereas in Sage you can say, you can be in your calculus class and say x to the minus x, e to the minus x times sine of x. So this is starting up the Maxima interface. Maxima is completely free. This is Maxima running on top of Common Lisp, again, the thing that Michael Still wrote. And it's included and built as part of Sage. And you can say, you know, ask for the integral of that function, get something back. You can also you can view a DVI representation of anything. This will pop up in a second. So it's kind of nice. So from the beginning in Sage, I've made it so every object has a LaTeX representation. So you can make matrices, whatever, and have a nice LaTeX representation of them. There's also a logging facility. If I say log DVI, for example, it pops up something, and then each command that I execute gets logged there. So here's an example. I'll make an elliptic curve of rank 2. I'll compute its three-division polynomial. And see, it's all appearing here in the DVI file, which is kind of nice.
You get the Maple
source underneath it? Yes. So one thing, if you have any object at all, you can just say LaTeX of that object, and it gives you the LaTeX. Also, there's an HTML log, which works similarly to the DVI log. And again, notice you can pop this up at any point during the session. It's generating the images in the background here. And it gives you sort of what happened already. That's kind of funny. But if you click on a link, it gives you the plain text output plus the LaTeX that you can paste into your paper. So. And actually, I thought of having this LaTeX stuff available everywhere while talking to you in Germany this summer. Nils.
Yeah.
I, when we were talking about Sage, that's exactly when I thought it would be a nice thing to have LaTeX. So it's kind of nice to have this. At the coding sprint at Sage Days, Joe Weatherall and Gonzalo Tornario wrote a thing. It's a LaTeX style file that allows you to embed Sage commands in your paper, and then it's kind of like BibTeX. You run it, you run LaTeX twice, and you run something kind of like BibTeX, and it converts all the Sage stuff into nice tech. So actually, here's an example of that. Let's see, LaTeX embed. So here's the input. So it's a LaTeX file, and you can see there are various things like consider the matrix A squared equals. And then this is the A squared defined in, so here, this code is input into Sage. You can see it looks very magma-like. You make the 10 by 10 matrix space over Q. You make the matrix whose entries are 0 up to 99. And then here you can say, consider the matrix A squared equals. And then this will actually convert it into the LaTeX representation of that matrix. When you compile this, the result looks like the following. Here it is. So, and you can even do stuff with, integrals. So see this line right here that has all these integrals in it, the corresponding tech looks like the following. Let me find it right here. So I define a function f and a function g, and I say integral sage of f, that LaTeX f equals sage of g. And then the result is like that. So it's kind of neat. This is just a neat trick that you can do if you design a system from the ground up to allow LaTeXing of arbitrary objects. And it's, the LaTeXing is pretty intelligent. It's recursive, et cetera. And I'm sure that you can do similar things with Maple or Mathematica already. Just nice that we're doing this. By the way, remember that we were doing some things before. If we restart Sage, the commands that I typed from before are available in your history. It remembers the history just like Bash does. Also, you can do a reverse search. If I type E, control P, it gives me each line that begins with E, which is a nice feature.
Doesn't that emax command on the prompt?
Yeah, but I'm sure it's configurable.
Okay.
I didn't write most of the interactive interface. It was written before Sage by Fernando Perez, and it's called IPython. And Fernando Perez is a computational physicist, and he wanted an amazingly nice interface for using Python, and this is what he wrote. And then I did some modifications of it to make it more suitable for math. For example, if you use Python and type 2/3, you get 0, which is possibly disturbing, say, to a first year student, and certainly always disturbing to me. in Sage, if you type 2/3, you get 2/3, which is better. And in fact, what you get is an element of the rational field. And this rational field It's something that's implemented using GMP, using the rational numbers in GMP. And it's something I implemented.
Whenever you type something like this,
yes.
the type of this object you get is a Sage type.
It's a Python class. There's a Python class for two-thirds. There's a Python class for rational field. If I type of A, it's that's the actual type name.
If you get a two-thirds from Maple, and
yes.
You also have a two-thirds.
Then it'll be there's in Magma, I was always annoyed that there's 20 different versions of one. In Sage, there's 2 billion different versions of one.
You
have a one in every different computer algebra system, and you have this one.
What happens if you try to add the two-thirds from Maple?
Okay, it'll give an error message because it's ambiguous. Addition in Sage, binary operations in Sage are unambiguous or you get an error. There's a notion of coercion and canonical coercion. Unless there's a canonical way of putting one object in the parent of the other one, then it gives an error message because you want addition to be commutative. I can demonstrate that for you. Again, it'll take a second to start up. It should give a type error, unable to find an unambiguous parent. Because which way do you coerce? You don't know. But if you really do want to add those two things, just do, I think this will work, but I might have to put a string of GP. Oh, no, so that works. Say what you want, so that's how you do it. Okay? It's not like Perry in that it tries to make sense of absolutely anything you type, if possible. It's much closer to Magma in that you have to type sensible things. When I say it, I'm just talking about Python, basically. But so.
Why does Maple of GP2 make more sense than GP2?
Maple of GP, so GP of 2 makes the number 2 in Perry. There's a running Perry interpreter. There's a variable in there named Sage square brackets 4. There's an array of values. And the fourth entry of that array is the number 2 in Perry. When I type Maple of 2 plus GP of 2, it's ambiguous. You could coerce in either way. So which one do you choose? So it doesn't make that choice for you, it gives an error. Whereas if you type maple of GP of 2, you're explicitly saying, I want to take that 2 in GP, make a maple object out of it, take that, and then add that to this other maple object. When you do this, it makes a new variable in maple, which is equal to 2. That one is equal to 2. It takes those two variables and adds them together and gets a new variable from that. No strings are being passed back and forth except for the add command on variables. If these had, if this number had 100,000 digits and that one had 100,000 digits, when it does the addition, it doesn't sort of push the 100,000 digit numbers back and forth. Yes?
If you throw away A, will it make sure to throw away the variable and say A?
It depends on the system. Some systems, for example, Singular, get really, really unhappy when you delete variables at the wrong time. Some systems like Perry, there's really no advantage because Perry doesn't do memory management, so why bother? It does in some cases, though, it will. For example, I think Magma is very sensible about deleting variables. I think in some cases it will delete things, in some cases it won't. You can tell by basically typing, looking at the source code for the clear function. So in Maple, what happens, as you can see here, if you decide that the variable isn't needed anymore, maybe this thing goes out of scope, it says that variable name is now allowed to be reused for another thing. It doesn't explicitly try to clear it, but it will reassign to it, which would then free it later. Okay, so I'm getting close to the... Oh, yes, please.
I mean, here you're just converting numbers from one system to another, but I guess
yes.
There must be other commands, like,
yeah.
Like I don't know, BNF in it.
Mm-hmm. That's far more difficult, and that's...
I guess you can't coerce that into anything.
So in the long run, as much as possible, I want to have it so that you can coerce between Sage and anything else in either direction when it makes sense. And so let's take Perry, for example. So I want to have arrows back and forth between Sage and other systems, but not between systems. So if you asked to go from Perry to say Magma, it would try to go from Perry to Sage and then from Sage to Magma. And you have to be explicit about that. Also, the way you go from Perry to Sage, well, it's not clear. If you have a number field, what do you want to do with it? Do you want to make a list with all kinds of different things in it, or do you want to actually make a Sage number field? Or a Sage number field, the way you should think about it, is it's similar to a Magma number field. The answer to that is you would make, if you wanted to make a number field out of your Perry object, you'd use the number field, this is not implemented right now, you'd use the number field constructor, and you'd give as input your Perry object. If you wanted to make a list of, if you want to make a list out of it, you'd give, just say list of the Perry thing. So This is partly, I guess, David Joyner and I, it's our answer to the whole question of how do you move stuff between different computer algebra systems in a nice way. And I think the answer is, you have objects in Sage, huge number of different objects in Sage that can be made from objects in other systems. Another big example would be a group. You have a group in, say, Gap, and you can make out of it a Sage group, and then you could, from that Sage group, you can make a Magma group. So to go from Gap to Magma, you go from Gap to Sage, and from Sage to Magma.
Okay. There are a lot of people in sort of the open math community and moving things around community, and Sage will only benefit from their work because they have a lot of good ideas about how to move things from one place to another. And how to draw these arrows depends on what they do to some extent. Peter.
Yeah, is there a problem with upper and lowercase being the same for some systems, different for others?
Hasn't been a problem at all, but except conceptually in your own mind.
For example, Here's an example. So make an elliptic curve again, 389A. Not a good example, no torsion. So in Sage, you say E dot torsion subgroup to get the torsion subgroup. You can make the magma elliptic curve F, say, out of this. This is firing up magma and then making a magma elliptic curve. Taking a while to start up magma. Okay, so magma is now running. This is an elliptic curve in magma. You can call commands on it just like you do in Sage, so using Python syntax. And what it did was it called the torsion subgroup in magma, giving the first argument as F. You could have alternatively, so the confusion there is psychological. You know, it's a little confusing because it's uppercase in magma and it's lowercase in Sage. There's been some suggestion that I should do some automatic, you know, change of that notation to this notation, but I don't think that's a good idea. And you don't either from your look on your face. You could also have alternatively done this as follows. The curve that we got into magma is called Sage square brackets 1. We can simply switch into magma, and then Sage square brackets 1 in magma is that curve, and then we could ask for its torsion subgroup. Ah, that's a very good question. How do you remember all this? And okay, pi in maple is capital P lowercase I. In peri, it's capital P lowercase I. In maxima, it's percent lowercase p lowercase I. It's different. It's annoying. So in Sage, it's just lowercase pi, like that. But if you say, it prints differently. Maybe that's stupid. Okay, that's not good. But if you say maple of pi, there's actually a function that makes the corresponding maple object out of it. You could say maxima of pi, well, I'll just say pi like that, and it makes the corresponding maxima of pi. And currently an undergrad is working on doing this for a whole bunch of functions, like sine, all the standard functions will have something similar. So you can make an expression such as, I don't know, pi squared plus e over 3. Okay, so that's an expression in Sage. This is a Sage object. These are constant functions, but you can say maple of that expression, and it knows how to convert each of the things into maple symbolically. And it's not just doing the string. So that's how we address that question. Okay. And we do not do that yet with functions, but that's under development. Okay, so what else do I want to tell you? Here's an amusing example, which just illustrates how you can compare the behavior of different programs nicely in Sage. Instead of having to run a whole bunch of different programs, you know, one command after another, you can run all these programs right there and see what they do. So it's kind of amusing to see what minus the current year factors as. In Sage, you can see the output just sort of symbolically looks like the product of that would multiply out to give 2006. In Gap, it gives you a list, but notice what it does with the minus sign. That's the fun part. In Gap, the first prime in the factorization is minus 2. I guess minus 2 is a prime for Gap. That's sensible, because it generates a prime ideal. In Peri, it gives minus 1 as a completely separate factor. In Maxima, very similar to Sage. In Cache, it gives the primes with the exponents plus some additional information telling you that there's a minus 1. It's kind of mysterious additional information, though. I mean, what is that? So I guess it's the unit in general. In Magma, it just completely ignores the minus 1. Actually, strangely enough, Magma is the only program I could find that ignores the sign in the factorization. Maple...
It does return it as a second return.
Oh, really? Okay, that's good to know.
It's the same with polynomials. It returns the constant value.
Okay, thank you for letting me know. So if you don't know that, then you just completely not get this sign. I see. Okay. There is a way to deal with additional return values in Magma from Sage if you use its interface. You have to give n args equals 2, and then it will give you back both of them. Mathematica, it's very similar to, I guess, Perry and what it does. All right, I'm going to skip this. This is the guy that wrote IPython, which is the very nice interactive interface that Sage uses. This is a slide justifying using Python as kind of the top-level implementation and gluing language for Sage. It's good because, well, it's really an open source, really truly free program. It was designed from the start by this guy, Guido van Rosen, to be very easy to extend. He worked for a lab that made a language that was not easy to extend, so he wanted to make something that was easy. Also, he's Dutch. I mean, having had a Dutch advisor, I somehow think Dutch things are better. I don't know. Now, I kind of want to finish my talk just by saying a little bit about how I address the issue or the following question. You're writing things in Python. Isn't it going to be so slow that it's completely useless and I can't possibly imagine using Sage for anything? So the answer to that question is that there is an extension language for Python called Pyrex, written by Greg Ewing of New Zealand. And it allows you to write code that looks almost the same as Python, except that you can call arbitrary C library functions. But you can also use Python objects. So here, this anup, that's the input to this function, this is just a Python integer. But you're able to call these C library functions. These are GMP C library functions. And you can write a function that's very fast. How fast? Well, here's some timings. If you just try to write the factorial function in pure Python, it takes 81.37 seconds to do that. Python has arbitrary precision integer arithmetic, but it's very portable, doesn't depend on too much. It doesn't use GMP ever. And so it's slower, unfortunately. If you use Perry to do that same calculation, I don't think Perry has an integer factorial function, but you can easily simulate it with product. It takes 19 seconds. If you write, well, skip that line. If you use Magma, it takes 9 seconds to do a factorial of 100,000. And with the function I just showed you, it takes 6.93 seconds. So even though Sage is written mostly in Python, when something has to be fast, you can make it fast by writing it in C. So this example illustrates that. Another quick thing is Sage, since it's written in Python, has the very nice feature that you can save and load arbitrary objects. You can turn them into strings. And this is not in a way that can be reconstructed. So there's a really nice thing built in from the core of the language that allows almost completely arbitrary objects to be turned into strings that can be saved to disk, transferred over the network, etc. And you benefit from that in Sage. With almost no work at all, essentially zero work on the part of the people implementing, say, elliptic curves. There's no code at all in elliptic curves for saving and loading elliptic curves to disk. But you can still do that. Yes?
But for instance, if you have an element of a number field, mm-hmm. if you save that to disk, and then you have another element of
Okay, number. Answer? People, okay, first let me say that Python is used by some major companies like Boston.com. They use Python for their website. They've thought about this sort of problem. Similar issues occur there. How do you save things to disk? And so here's the answer that they came up with. If you save one individual object, everything that's needed for that object is saved with it. If you save both number field elements together, say as a list of the two, it doesn't save the everything that's needed twice. It saves just one instance of the extra structure. Okay? Answer. Basically, this has gone through 10 years of development by a very active community, and it's pretty robust now. And I don't have to write any of it, I just benefit. And you would too if you use Sage. let's see, what else? I'll just have two more slides. One, attribution, since Sage uses a whole bunch of different systems, if you use Sage to do something, you should figure out what it's using and cite that system as well. I think that if people just start citing Sage when they're really using Perry or Gap or something, that could be very bad. It would be unfair to those systems. And it's not hard to find out what Sage uses. Just use double question mark and you get it. Finally, here's an example
where you can, I wanted to implement Bernoulli numbers in Sage, so I was curious what system I should use. Since I have all these different, you know, Maxima implements Bernoulli numbers, Perry implements Bernoulli numbers, all these programs implement Bernoulli number calculations, which one should you use? In Sage, you can very easily time the behavior of a wide range of systems. You can see the timings up on the slide for a number of different systems for computing the 1,000th Bernoulli number. It's kind of surprising, the spread of times. Maybe the first one isn't so surprising, since people like to joke about Maple being slow, but it's somewhat slow. Maxima is also very slow. Magma takes 2.58 seconds. Gap takes 5.92 seconds, which isn't so good. Mathematica is better, 1 second. There's a web page called Bernoulli.org, which has a C++ binary that does it in 0.06 seconds, which is really good. And Perry does it in 0.00000. So Perry's really fast. And in fact, I gave as a student project, some of you know Kevin McGowan, who was an undergrad at Oregon State. His student project in a course I taught last quarter was to figure out why Perry is so fast, and then write a paper about it. So the answer is that Perry uses analytic tricks. So you use the relation between zeta of n for the Bernoulli number of b sub n is closely related to zeta of n. So you compute zeta of n to very, very high precision, and zeta of n is 1.00000000000000, and then at the very end there's a little number there. If you get that, say using the Euler product, then you can determine the Bernoulli number. We're trying to generalize this to Bernoulli numbers attached to Dirichlet characters. Sort of fun. Let's give two quick examples. So here's an example of an elliptic curve and computation of its L series, and then graphing the L series using matplotlib. And here's another example with a complex L series. Perry doesn't have a function for computing complex L series, but it has an incomplete gamma function. And using a little extra Sage code, you can use that to compute complex L functions. So this is the L function of a rank 2 elliptic curve plotted. I guess it's the absolute value of the real part of the L function of a rank 2 elliptic curve in a neighborhood of S equal to 1. So I think I'll stop with this slide and encourage any questions or comments. Thank you. Yes?
So without having to do it all by hand, is there a function that says, I want to try doing this, try all the systems and return the one which is fastest?
That's a great question. So it's like an automatically tuned, there's something called Atlas for linear algebra that tries to do that sort of thing, where you automatically tune things. I haven't thought about it at all, about how to do that well. I mean, the short answer is no. But it's extremely interesting testing out a range of systems. And for example, polynomial factorization. I think I found that Perry is much better for a certain range of degrees than NTL. And NTL is much better for another range of degrees. I mean, it's just their algorithms are tuned a lot differently. So you discover all these things when you start testing, and it could vary from system to, you know, from hardware to hardware. So it's nice to have these various things available. The answer to your question is I haven't done anything like that, but any ideas, I'd appreciate it. Nils?
Yeah. Steve, I don't know if this script applies in this case, but hypothetically, you find one very nice implementation of linear algebra, mm-hmm. So you plug that into Sage.
Yes.
You find, say, a very nice implementation of local fields from another source.
Yeah, for example, Cache has the same thing as Magma for local fields.
So you plug that in.
Yes, yeah.
Now you want to do linear algebra over local fields.
Mm-hmm. It's generic like in Magma. I mean, there's linear algebra, there's a matrix class over an arbitrary ring. So. It's just generic. I mean, if you make any ring class with elements, then you can make matrices over that ring. And then you can derive from that class and make special functionality for echelon forms, for example. That's very clean in Python how you set this up.
I'm just afraid that the generic wrapper would be there, but any real functionality might only exist in specializations.
So the way it's coded is, essentially any function you'd want to call in a matrix is pretty much there, but it's potentially very slow because it's generic. But to make things fast, you would think, wow, geez, determinants or echelon forms of matrices over local fields are really slow because they're just using some generic machinery. That one function you would then write and then send me, and it would become part of Sage, and that one function would be much faster. But the generic functionality, just like Magma, is programmed at some high level. Other comments or questions? I know that I'm totally over time. There's no speaker after me. But any other comments or questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Just before everybody vanishes, we should probably thank Matt for organizing this.
And Kristen. Yeah. I'm in favor.
I'll also just say that we're not going to chase everybody out of the building now, so if you take your time and I'll wait. If you want to chat or ask more questions, that's fine.
So what do you think of Sage?
There are a lot of things I wanted to show you. Could be. A lot of things I don't know about.
Could very well be. Could be foster too. I will look right now. Indeed. Hey, I didn't know that. Very good.
Try it on 100,000.
Okay.
You almost had me convinced to start using it.
That was very
really. That's
pathetic.
Impressive because you're a diehard Magma person.
No, that's, I share it right from the start. I shared your.
That's the time.
I shared those concerns about Magma.
Yeah, you were worse than me. I was the one that was like Magma. But,
it's just so damn good.
Still use your Magma stuff.
Yeah, I tried the factorial and it didn't seem too slow. And
wait, I'm suspicious of that. That's impossible.
I tried the product and it didn't seem as slow as what you had put up. You may have
a faster computer than me.
I don't think so.
Oddly enough, you get a faster factorial in Magma if you first create a list of the consecutive integers and then apply the multiplication reduction on that.
Really?
Multiplication reduction is better implemented than factorial.
No way.
Yeah.
Well,
it's an oversight.
It's not from
memory. Just creating a list of integers and putting every single multiplier in front of them.
Most pressing list.
You don't have to print it out.
Yeah.
You construct.
That's pretty good. It's definitely faster.
Because the factorial is so large, constructing all the list.
Yes.
Are you interested in dinner tonight?
Because it's essentially taking the same.
No. Okay, no problem.
Yeah. So it's 3 seconds, at least on this laptop, using factorial instead of product.
What were you getting with Sage? 6 seconds?
Yeah, using GMP, it was taking 6 seconds.
So, are you the primary architect of this?
Yeah.
And the other guy you named?
No, but then you're running into...
So you're like chief engineer of this project. This must be fairly time-consuming.
How do you get the stuff out?
Yeah, you're right.
Just a guess. I would really like to have you come up and talk about some of this stuff.
You can do it gradually.
Sure. Yeah, it'll be especially easy.
We're about to vanish quickly to get back.
Start with simply wrapping whatever you have in Magma stirred.
Very nice, yeah.
Will you plot something for me?
Do you have anything?
Sure.
What kind of thing do you want to...
Yeah.
What do you want to plot?
Well, anything. I just want to see...
Oh, sure.
And of course, I just want to see it work.
I don't think anything is done unless there's something in Maxima already.
Transfer between systems.
Yeah,
Maxima certainly has a lot with differential equations in the sense of your calculus class differential equations, but not differential Galois, as far as I know. Nobody's really got into that. There's some non-commutative algebra, but.
No, it's starting in Maxima, right?
Yeah. Right. There's nothing insane. There's been nobody stepping up to the plate.
What does John Cannon and all the other people think of this?
No, but
well, I don't know. I'm not so sure.
That big things have to be transferred.
They don't. I don't think John's so happy, I don't really know for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, based on how he treated David for so much lesser infractions, I assume he is not so happy. I mean, when I write to ask for new versions of Magma for various reasons, because I develop for them, they just ignore my emails now. So. And then I had a web page where you can paste Magma code in and get answers. And then I was told to desist, even though I had official permission for it before. And the letter also said something about, well, I mean, I could show you the letter, but...
They apparently now have that available on their own web page.
Yeah, they do. They copied my code, my GPL code. They didn't make it available. They didn't make their code available. Technically, they're violating GPL. They cite me. But they said in the email, John said in the email to me, I can't use Magma anymore for that. But you're still allowed to use Magma as a backend for some of your modular forms database. So the modular forms database, when you ask for forms of a given level of weight, it stores a lot of things internally in Magma format. It runs Magma to format in some cases. And it runs Magma to compute various dimensions sometimes. So he actually believes that he can tell me I can't use that anymore. Time as well. He hasn't told me that, but he reserves the right to do so. So when you buy Magma, you don't have a license to make it usable from a web page. Kind of annoying.
So we're trying to convert some of your Magma old Magma code to...
Yeah, I've written a ton of modular symbol stuff in Sage, but it's not optimized well right now. It's not so fast.
I'm... I mean, it's not like you would... I think we don't sign anything. Yeah.
That's a big mistake on their part.
Yeah, so we can...
I never signed a single thing.
No.
Yeah, which is really weird if you think about it. They should have made people sign something, but they didn't.
As long as they
that's I think that will come back to
when you
people who contribute possibly large chunks of code to Magma don't sign any copyright forms at all. Like when you publish a paper, you sign something giving them the right to redistribute it. I haven't given Magma the right to redistribute any of my code that they use for distribute. And that's the case for hundreds, probably hundreds of people. Like with Sage, I'm careful when people send me code. I make them often resend it to me with a GPL notice on the top so that I can try it. So it's free.
It doesn't have the ease of use.
The sort of person that can use it.
Actually, Magma should be afraid.
they can't afford doing anything about it.
Actually, if it's more than one screen,
that would be just
when I think about it, changes would always be that could be an option. It would be trivial to implement.
Those places are more or less.
I haven't thought of doing that. What's the first one? I should work up the notion in the config file. Or have it pop up in a web browser or API file nicely blocked. I mean, other systems do that. Yeah, that is good too. It's a lot of work. Every time think about how you use LaTeX and how you call LaTeX on CMH, you call LaTeX on the entries in the matrix. It's tricky, but it's good to
It's been happening on a different level already.
Oh, you do
it really easy.
Because Magma started. But programming language is
implement something for and sure enough,
for making a function.
Next summer, he gets invited to sit.
Indentation. That's bad because, if you paste something in, you could mess it up. But it's good because...
Thanks, man.
It's good because if you look at somebody else's code, they can't trick you with messed up indentation. The indentation really is right. Plus, it makes the code a lot cleaner. Because you don't have, if you just look at, some Python code, here's the code for the Perry interface, for example. So it doesn't have lots of begins and ends, all that stuff. So it's just cleaner looking. You don't have to worry. Okay, you don't have to get annoyed because the braces are in the wrong place. Like whenever you read somebody else's C code, inevitably all the braces are in the wrong places. So you don't get annoyed by that. There's no choice at all where the braces are. So Python's really nice.
And when you download the Windows, does it come with the Cygwin and everything?
No, not yet. There are some old versions. Currently, Windows is the hardest platform to install on, to some extent. You have to download Cygwin.
you have two.
Yeah, I'm going to try to. Maybe not.
You just download Cygwin with a couple of extra development packages, GCC. They're listed in the install guide.
Okay.
You build it by just typing tar xvf cdn directory type make, wait 40 minutes or whatever on Cygwin, and you start up. It won't work immediately because of a bug in Cygwin 19.4 DLL, Cygwin 1.dll.
Okay.
This bug emerged in the first week of February and will hopefully be fixed in the next release, which is coming out soon. Cygwin. It's a bug in Cygwin that messes up all Python extensions, not just mine. There's a list of, I think, six packages that you have to downgrade, and instructions for how to do this in the README in Cygwin. So you run the Cygwin installer again, you downgrade those packages, then everything works perfectly.
So the story so is actually wait a month until they release the new version to put this on
but
my Windows.
It's not hard, though. I mean, I made it out to be hard, but it will work.
Yeah.
And
but on Linux, it's just a matter of it might untarring and typing make.
That's right. Or on OS X. On OS X, on Windows, on both of those.
Excellent.
Just untar and type. Windows is harder because there isn't an MSI installer distributed. There actually is an MSI installer that Gary Zablakis, who's contributed a lot to Yacht, made, but he hasn't given it to me and put it on the web. But
okay.
It does exist. It's just...
Well, my home machine has Linux on it, so that's fine.
But with Cygwin,
I won't put it on
it's
my
not
laptop
as bad as
until...
I mean, it's not as bad as what I just said. And Make does work fine in Windows. And the thing about Windows is it's so homogeneous that it is going to work. It's just that it's annoying that you have to downgrade these packages because you have to get familiar with the Cygwin installer program, which is
right,
a little bit goofy.
Okay.
But it does work, actually.
You said that VMware does no problem, right?
Yeah, VMware. If you install a Linux machine, it works. What?
It's about $200.
No.
It's
free. There's a.
Hope to see you in Vancouver. So
yes. Yeah. I'll be there. All right. See you later. Thanks for coming to my talk. There's something brand new called VMware Player.
Uh-huh.
You'll take an existing VMware virtual machine and play it,
okay.
And it's genuinely free. It's
okay.
Not a trial version.
Okay.
VMware just decided they want to increase people using VMware. You can't use it. You can't make your own new virtual machines. But VMware on their website has a version of Ubuntu, for example.
Oh, okay.
Ubuntu Linux pre-made.
Okay.
You just download this huge, 500 megabyte zip file. You decompress it, and then you run VMware Player. VMware Player is like a 20 meg MSI file, and then you're in Linux.
Okay.
And they make it. They call it the VMware web appliance, and they sell it as something to browse the web more safely than from Windows, because you're browsing it through this Linux virtual machine. And basically, it has Firefox. That's the only thing that it runs.
Okay.
But actually, it has almost everything else. It's actually cool.
That's a better way to run it.
That's a good way under. But there's a performance hit of about 20-30%.
Okay.
Compared to running natively under Linux or Cygwin. Cygwin's very fast. There's almost, as far as I can tell, there isn't a performance hit. But except maybe with funny memory management stuff. Opening and closing files is slower under Cygwin than under Linux. But actually just doing a specific calculation that's all in C is just as fast under Cygwin as it would be otherwise.
So. Okay.
This new Intel architecture has this virtualization.
Yeah, that's going to make VMware way better.
Yeah.
So, the guy wanted to see a graph disappeared. I have to show him a graph. I wanted to show us some graphs during the talk.
Show me a graph.
Okay, I'll show you a graph. Let's see.
Can you graph the elliptic curve?
There actually is some nice code for doing that, but I haven't used it for a while because
okay.
I'm scared to try it. Yeah. There's actually, in my inbox, there is code to do that I haven't put into Sage.
Oh, cool.
Specifically for graphing elliptic curves, because I've used it a lot for teaching.
Uh-huh.
I like to print out a bunch of curves with two dots on them and have the students add them together on a piece of paper.
Excellent.
It's kind of fun, like for high school kids. But I'll make a graph. Let's see. So I think I fortunately have something in my buffer. So what it's doing is it's evaluating the L series of the elliptic curve and plotting it.
Uh-huh.
And you can, in this program, you can zoom in and let's see. I guess you,
wow.
You click somewhere and then you can. Oh, you can change things like the axes and stuff, and you can.
This is nice.
Yeah, it's so you can move things around. No, it does. The axes are.
Okay.
Let me move. It does vanish at one. Oh, sorry. So one thing is, notice that the input was just a list of numbers. I didn't specify anything about where they are. Yeah. And it's a problem. So here's a function, f equals e dot l series. It's a perfectly good function. You can evaluate it, a number like 1.1, and you get a number out.
Yeah.
There's currently nothing in Sage that just it'd be nice to say f dot plot and just get a nice plot of it. That is not defined yet, and that's a student project right now as well. It's a good project for somebody to do.
So
that doesn't exist.
You're moving here next month.
something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I can be with my wonderful wife.
Okay.
She's right there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Are you? You're still going to be here for? Oh,
yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
So, where are you moving? Are you trying to find a
house? No. I don't know. My wife lives on Capitol Hill.
Oh, okay. That's
so
nice.
That's where
place.
I'll move. Yeah. She has an apartment there.
Nice. There's a crêperie cafe.
Yeah. There's so. Not to the crêperie, but there's so many cool restaurants and coffee shops in Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
There's a lot of modular symbols, but they haven't been optimized. Like you can, it has modular symbols for any character for gamma 1 and gamma 0 and any weight. So you can say like gamma 0 of, I don't know, 12 weight 4, that sort of thing. And it does it, or gamma, you can do gamma 1 directly, weight 4. You can get a basis, say, you can get heck operators. T is just a shortcut for the second heck operator. You can get the matrix of that operator. This is a good place where DVI viewing is nice. See, so you can actually see the entries.
What's a dimension?
Let's see. This one was, what was it? M dimension 24. Yeah. You can get the characteristic polynomial and factor it. Let's see. So if I get the matrix. Yeah, it's really, there's a lot that is actually done right now. Kare-Pauli gives you the Kare-Pauli.
So
this factors it.
Does, like, graph theory,
I mean, like, for making the method of graphs type stuff really nice
basically,
and clean?
Yeah. That
I was actually thinking exactly about doing this, but nothing's implemented.
Okay.
It isn't hard to implement things like that, but the design can be interesting. And I haven't implemented the method of graphs yet, which won't be difficult since it has finite fields nicely and it has polynomial factorization over finite fields. It has everything you need to do it. It's just not implemented. I was going to say, so we have this space of modular symbols. You can compute some big heck operator. Maybe it takes a long time, probably partly because the thing's slow, but because things haven't... It doesn't do anything until it... Only when it actually computes the matrix does it spend time. So that heck operator is cached with M.
Okay.
Unlike some systems, you can always get at the caching. So there's a dict which has sort of every attribute of M. And you can see all the attributes. If you wanted to get rid of that heck operator being cached, you just have to delete the appropriate attribute.
Okay.
So it's not difficult.
I
but also you
something
can...
Something very interesting in Magma.
You can, yes.
I was just doing something really simple, which is just going through all the JN variants in some large finite field and counting the points and making sure that some of them had some certain kind of characteristic problem.
Mm-hmm.
This was leading to a memory leak. It's just
there's a lot of memory leaks in Magma. So Magma's garbage collection and reference counting without cycle collection or without cycle finding. So basically, in 1999 when I started using Magma, this caused me serious trouble. So basically, you have objects. Each one has a member, which is its reference. It's a standard thing. But very often in mathematics, it makes sense to have circular references. That's a very normal thing to do. You have an element, like a JN variant, a finite field, etc. You have a circular reference. Unless there's very specific C code written to take care of that,
I'm just gonna move here.
This will never be garbage collected.
I forgot why.
Okay. And Magma, this happens. In my code, I have an element, a modular symbol X, a space of modular symbols, and a modular symbol. This will never get cleared out. It's horrible. And I was promised year after year that they would fix this, but they didn't. And then they say, the longer they don't do it, the harder it gets to fix it. So, but look here, if you can save this M that I've been computing with.
Okay.
It's now saved on disk as a file.
What does it
41K.
Like? Okay.
It's .sog/sage object. It's a zlib compressed object. And then you can load it back, and you get back that space of modular symbols. And now you can do things like, remember the heck operator, the matrix? It's now instantaneous because it's saved as part of the object. But you can do some really cool things, like you could be computing with the space of modular symbols and things are getting too slow because you don't have enough memory on here. You save the space of modular symbols, you send it over the network to another server, load it in over there, do the calculations you need, bring it back.
You know,
works
there
nice.
Are like really
nice.
Simple things that I like here, which is like, the commands from the previous time you used.
Yeah, that's
that
a great thing.
That's a simple thing.
That's just something that Fernando Perez who wrote IPython did.
Yeah.
It's just like in Bash. But I like that so much I wanted them to add that to Magma. I asked several times and they ignored me. But this guy here, he's a computational physicist, but he gave a talk at Sage Days and he wrote this this IPython shell that does the command history.
It's just
but it's,
some simple things
really,
that you can do that really make a difference.
It is really nice.
and then so I hope I interested you in Sage, so that when, you know, when I'm here next month, we can talk about how to maybe make the method of graphs really nice to you.
And also, I think you have any sort of crystal plan.
I study
the
company.
Okay. You don't have it.
Yeah,
I'm trying to take. Various people have written some really amazing Perry programs, like Denis Simone and various other people in France. And you can actually use that stuff, Sage, in a nice way. So here's an example. Make an elliptic curve, say 3D9A again. You can say Simone 2 descent. And it calls Simone's program in an instance of GP just for Simone's code. And it does the full, it runs Simone's program and gives you back the result. And he has an algebraic 2 descent, which is pretty good in certain cases, like if you have a curve of large conductor. So. But the thing is, to try to figure out how to use his program in Paris at all is like a day project, just to understand, because he gives no examples in the documentation. And actually, I still haven't figured out how to use all of it, which is why this only works over Q instead of number fields. But you don't have to worry about that. Here are a bunch of examples. There are a bunch of examples here. So these are the various parameters, and there's some defaults. I guess I've left them in French. His documentation is in French, and I haven't translated it. But So and it has you just look at these examples. 10 seconds later, you're using it, no problem.
So another thing I would like to work on probably is do these quaternions or other fields.
That should be. Yeah, actually, that would be really good. There's a little bit of support now for quaternion algebras that David Cole wrote for Sage. There's a quaternion algebra. Resizing the window is not good. Currently, it's completely messed up my terminal. There's a quaternion algebra. So here are examples of making quaternion algebras. Right. I think you could define them over any field, actually. I don't think there's anything about Q that's relevant to this.
Like computing the class number, I think.
You should meet Lessing.
He's also interested in computing Hilbert modulus.
Yeah, I should actually. Yes, he's very interested in that. So you can make quaternion algebras and do arithmetic with them, you know, over other fields. Right? There's basic support that David added, but it hasn't advanced so much, fortunately. He's been adding a bunch though for quaternion algebras over Q because he and Lassine and I are writing a paper. We want to implement some algorithm. That's an easy way to do it because then you're using it in a Linux environment. But it's not so bad in Sigwin, actually.
My wife's thing is
Sigwin's really
OS. I can try on that.
They should, just use OS 10. Support for OS 10 is excellent.
Yeah,
the only thing is you have to have Xcode so that you have, which is like on the DVD that comes with the computer. You might want to update it to the latest version though.
Right.
But Mac support is excellent. I have a Mac at home, which I use. And also this guy pointed him out on one of the slides, who is an OS 10 developer, is using Sage a lot. And he's been...
Wasn't he the self-proclaimed Apple expert or something in the country?
I think he's the Apple expert, not the self-proclaimed.
He was an Apple.
I wouldn't go so far as just saying self. He's a genuine Apple expert. He worked on... he was one of the authors of the OS 10 kernel. I guess he worked at Apple for 6 years at least or something. He made a lot of money and retired. It's great. He's going to grad school, actually. He lives near Stanford, and he takes classes at Stanford. So probably right now he's doing homework from Ravi Ramakrishnan's algebraic geometry class. That's what he basically spends most of his time on. So he's trying to do grad geometry. He doesn't have to think about jobs.
Thank you very much.